The Trail West was always a tough topic to discuss. I knew that it was the cause of so many lives lost. That's why I was hesitant to agree to my husband when he proposed that we take the journey.
Our decision wasn't easy. Primrose and I had known each other since we were little, so we had lots of trust in one another. But that didn't change the fact that we were scared to death.
When Alden told me that he'd make around $16 a day, I knew we should go. Regardless of how frightened I was of the journey, we'd now be making more money than we needed for a whole week. We started to pack everything into our wagon that would become our home over the next several months. The children were eagerly asking why we were choosing to leave. They were just as scared as us.
We left early on a bright Monday morning from our little town up in the western part of Virginia alongside the Appalachians. The start of our journey was going smooth until we crossed our first large plateau.
The sights of gravestones struck us into silence. Booming thunder woke up the children from their mid-afternoon nap, and the horses let out a scared yelp, wondering what we were going to make them pass, so we decided to call it a night.
We stayed amongst a few other wagons, one of which carried a family of 11. They were from Chicago, and they were very well the nicest people we'd met so far. When Brinley, Primrose's middle child, was coughing and wheezing, the mother of this family offered up some of her homemade soup.
We didn't get much sleep, but thankfully the storms had passed the next day and the sky was clear. I stayed in the wagon with the kids and Ruth while our husbands led the way at the horses. They made small talk in hopes to lighten the depressing mood that hung over us.
The landscape sure didn't seem to change. Weeks and weeks of watching tall grass covering miles of plateaus with moose munching on it. Our only form of entertainment was the kids' constant chatter of their dreams of what lies ahead.
But about a month in, the Great Plains scenery started to set in, all the bison hiding the terrain full of wheat and the squirrels underneath it too.
The end of spring became a reality. The steaming summer sun came full force on us. Water was scarce, and our only way to stay cool was to stay in the shelter of the wagon.
The weeks got even longer, and Brinley now had constant headaches with the scorching heat. I was now 8 months pregnant, and the heat of the summer didn't help us one bit.
After what seemed like years of traveling through the hot plains, we finally reached the Great Salt Lake. We saw a wide body of water with lots of people in wagons, everyone camped near the bank in order to fill their tins with refreshing water.
I remember the vivid feeling of knowing that the baby was to be born there. We named him Bane after his great-grandfather. Shortly after, Ruth and I's husband decided to head forward on the trail ahead of us.
This was fine, of course, because we knew that they wanted to get to California before it was too late. However, it was hard to see them go, but I wanted to show that I could be there for Primrose and her baby.
Ruth and I waited only a short while before leaving once again. We packed up the wagon, rounded the children, off we went.
The last leg of our trip went by faster than the first. Once we had reached California, my heart leapt with joy.
After a long and treacherous journey, we made it at last. Our husbands, Hugh and Alton, told us they were going to a mining camp called French Coral, so we got directions from another family coming back from there.
The camp was certainly a sight to see. Standing in front of me was people of all ages. There were fathers working in the mines and mothers attending to their rowdy children.
After we had found Alton, he delivered some devastating news. Along the way, Hugh had caught a nasty cold. Soon it evolved into much more, to the point where he was coughing and wheezing and was too tired to carry on. After one particularly rough day on the journey, he lied down to get some rest. He didn't wake up, and they had to bury him there.
The news came as such a shock. I couldn't believe what he was telling me. I was instantly devastated. As time passed, I began to feel angry. I was angry at Primrose. She had a husband alive and healthy. She also had a large family, as happy as can be.
For several weeks after the news, Ruth could barely look me in the eyes. She was going through a lot and needed time to think.
Life was at a downhill. Alton came back to us every day with hardly anything. He'd go through about 30 buckets of dirt a day, only to find around $10. One good thing was that Primrose and I made about $30 a day cooking, which was much more than I could ask for.
But then one afternoon, Alton came to us with a grin as big as a cardinal tree on his face. He explained how he'd hit the jackpot and then he wouldn't even have to work anymore. We were all homesick and had enough of California, so we eagerly packed up all of our belongings and bid farewell to our fellow camp buddies.
The way home was even less eventful than the way there, if possible. I was still mourning over my loss, but Primrose and her kids made an effort to cheer me up, and it helped. Even if I didn't have Hugh by my side anymore, Primrose's family happily took me in.
If there's anything I learned during this journey, it's that you must stick together through the long haul to get to the good parts in life.